I almost hit the end stream button. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to an episode of the Road to the Garden podcast. I am the person who introduces this thing. My name is Michael. I'm here with the panel, including Tommy, who I talk to just about every time. Tommy, how are you doing?
I'm great, Michael. Thank you. How are you?
You know, I'm doing well. You know, there are four other people I hope are doing really well. Four beautiful, kind, intelligent people. Chris, Ryan, Tyler, Sarah. You didn't think I could count Tyler?
I didn't think you were counting me as one of those people.
Introduce yourselves to the people. Tell us how you're doing. Whatever order you guys want. As chaotic as possible.
I'll go. Hello, everybody. My name is Chris. I am here occasionally. I also co-host the podcast with Michael. I'm happy to be here and break down kind of the season.
I loved that. Michael, wave and smile. That just was great. I'm Sarah. I have been, I think this is my second time on the podcast this season, I think. And we'll be much more involved next season. So very excited.
What's up, everyone? I'm Ryan, co-host of Biggie's Barroom. Very hungover from a national championship day parade, but I'm here for this podcast.
I'm the better half of the Biggie's Barroom, Tyler. Yeah, this is going to be something for sure. So,
Tyler, I'm happy you're here also, just a couple days after, you know, the passing of one of your models or inspirations, O.J. Simpson. So thank you for being here. I know, heavy heart.
I've had some exes out of like O.J. Simpson, if you know what I mean. All right. Well, man, got off the rails.
For the world, it's me, yours truly. So DePaul basketball. We'll start with DePaul. We'll start from the bottom.
I'm bringing up Yuli now. You guys, I'm bringing up Yuli now. If we're going off the rails, I'm
gosh, you're gonna make me sure, like crying, laughing. This is
what a world.
You guys don't have makeup on. I do. We can't. I'm the face of this now. So sorry, Michael.
We're gonna get canceled, guys.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough start. Tommy, tell me how you feel about the season DePaul had.
Oh, it was quite the year for the Big East, Mike. We had this conference ringing back-to-back national champion, and we had a team that didn't win a game in conference play and pretty much everything in between. And team that didn't win a game, of course, DePaul, they won their last game on December 30th against Chicago State, and they did not win a game after that. But there are brighter days ahead. I mean, it can't get much worse for DePaul. So, looking ahead, I mean, do we even want to look back at this season for DePaul? Yep. Yeah. Are we all in agreement there?
Yeah.
We're not even going to do a moment of silence for Tony Stubblefield?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a moment of silence for Tony Stubblefield.
I'll pour one out.
Thank you. He's gone. He took a job back at Oregon. Good for him. He's on the bench there. And then Chris Holtman came in. And he brought over a full staff of other Butler guys, and they have a lot of players now.
Yeah. Troy D'Amico, CJ Gunn, NJ Benson, David Thomas, Jacob Meyer, and Isaiah Rivera. Getting those off of Ryan's transfer tracker. Everybody go follow Ryan and his transfer tracker. It's a great tool for the offseason to keep you updated all day long. But we have no idea what this team is going to look like next year. They have a lot of guys from a lot of mid-major schools, and sounds like a topic for Chris Thedinga to break down, the commissioner of every mid-major school.
Yeah. You know, some of the pieces they brought over are intriguing. They have a few Missouri Valley guys and high on that conference. They seem up transfers seem to do pretty well from the Missouri Valley in general. So we'll see. But yeah, I think this will kind of be a needed change for DePaul. Hopefully Holtman gets things back on the track, because DePaul does have, you know, they're in Chicago. They have a good, background in basketball. They should be better than they are. And so hopefully we get DePaul basketball back to what they can be.
When we say back to on track, I mean, this team hasn't been successful in about 60 years, right? So
they
use it back loosely.
They were okay in early 2000s, 90s. They were all right.
They have not made an NCAA tournament bid, since they've become a Big East team.
Yeah. Do you guys think Chris Holtman will get 3 years? If Chris Holtman can't turn it around, do you think there begins to have serious conversations about relegating DePaul?
Yeah, I mean, if they can't, that's kind of like why the bids were so messed up this season because you have UConn that you guys have experienced two national championships, and then you have DePaul who can't win a game in conference. It screws everyone else over. Coming from the bitter St. John's fan I am for not getting a bid.
You guys are being way too nice to DePaul. DePaul is a laughingstock of college basketball. DePaul was fielded the worst team to ever play college basketball and then brought a bunch of mid-major guys in, and you guys think that's going to work?
Trust the process. That's the only thing I can give to them. You got to trust the process and see.
DePaul is like kind of UConn for me, where Ryan and I've been saying UConn is going to be good until they're not. DePaul's bad until they're not. So,
One thing I will say is I don't think they're going to be good next year, but like that said, they're laying a foundation. Like a couple of the transfers they brought in, like David Thomas, 3 years, Jacob Myers, 3 years. And I believe he averaged like 15 points a game at Coastal Carolina, something like that. So they're not, are they going to be good next year? Probably not, but like they're doing enough to lay a foundation. And I feel like at this point, considering the guys they've brought in, I think they're just going to be kind of big fish hunting. You got good depth pieces. You got fine depth pieces. Now you want to look for a star to maybe win 3, 4, 5 conference games and show you're progressing. I think that's really what you're looking for.
Looking for respect. How about this take?
Yeah.
I think comparing Stubblefield to Holtman, Holtman is a much better coach at this point in his career than Stubblefield was when he was hired. Do we all agree on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's had much more success. He's, you know, taken that Ohio State team to the NCAA tournament multiple times, sent guys to the NBA. I like to hire, but I kind of agree with Tyler. Like, I'll bet on them once they give me a reason to.
Yeah.
Is this Wayne Peavy stuff true? That he was trying to become the AD at Kentucky?
I have no idea. Right. I don't have inside sources at Kentucky.
Where do you have it?
Nowhere.
The same $6 insider club that we're all subscribed to.
Yeah. I am not.
Yeah, you know.
Sarah gets.
I can't afford it. I get it. I got other sources. Don't even worry.
Hell yeah. Oh my God. All right. I mean, what
Ooh.
Is.
Oh, before we do anything, breaking news. I don't know if we have a breaking news sound. Penn transfer guard Tyler Perkins is committed to Villanova.
I didn't see that coming personally. You know, they hid that really well.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for being the scoop dog. I mean, sorry, for Villanova.
I already sent a tweet out, Ty.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Damn it. All right.
Wow.
Like a minute ago.
All right. Well, we'll talk about it later. Fuck you guys. All right. Moving on then. Georgetown's next. Georgetown also just wasn't good last year. I don't know if we need to talk about Georgetown last year. Their only two wins were DePaul. Yeah. Anyone have any big takes on Georgetown?
Mike, you're the Georgetown guy. Talk us through it.
Oh, boy.
Talk us through the offseason here. What are we looking at?
Yeah, so Georgetown offseason, you really bring back a couple pieces you want to like build around. Jaden Epps, Dontrus Styles is coming back for senior year. Drew Fielder comes back. Those are really the three key guys you're looking at. Supreme Cook will probably come off the bench next season. And then they're bringing in transfers. Micah Peavy committed yesterday. He is a defensive-minded wing from TCU. TCU goes from beating Georgetown in the most BS way to losing their best defender to Georgetown. So I think that's a big impact addition because Georgetown, one thing Georgetown hasn't done for the last 6 years is play defense. Micah Peavy plays defense, so that's good for them. And then looks like rumors are pointing towards a point guard by the name of Malik Mack committing to Georgetown. They needed a point guard. He's really good at this basketball thing. They've got a backcourt, and they've got arguably one of the best point guards in the transfer portal coming over. So, I think that's pretty big. Ed Cooley's strategy seems to just be throw money at shit, and in this era of college basketball, that kind of works.
Yeah, it'll be if Mack does commit, like people are saying, it's an intriguing backcourt. I'm not super high on Mack personally, just because he came from a losing Ivy League team. I like Ivy transfers if they come from good teams. Harvard hasn't been good for a while. But yeah, Jaden Epps, look, a lot of his efficiency numbers should take a tick up with a little bit less of the load on his shoulders, hopefully next year. So I'm excited to see him play without having to score 40 for them to have a chance to win.
I thought it was interesting that Micah Peavy committed over to Georgetown over like teams like Houston. I know it might just be clearly NIL, but I do think in this NIL time, and Ed Cooley's a pretty good recruiter anyway, they have a better chance of being good. because I think you have a, you know, you've had a recipe where Ed Cooley has brought in players. I mean, coming off a disastrous year, this is a pretty good start to the offseason for them.
Yeah, certainly. I think a big part of, I mean, for any team, not just Georgetown, is about finding guys that can fit instead of just throwing money at players. I mean, we saw some teams last year throw some big money at players, and it didn't work out. So I like this fit for Micah Peavy at Georgetown. I think Jaden Epps and Malik Mack, if he does commit to Georgetown, will be a really fun backcourt. But, yeah, I mean, Ed Cooley's got his work cut out for him. It's going to be interesting to see what's going on. I'd also like to commend Ryan here. I'm looking at the transfer tracker, and he already has Tyler Perkins for Villanova in there. That's impressive stuff, Ryan. Multitasking. Yeah,
it's about all I contribute to Big East Twitter, so I'll do my best to keep it up to date.
Yeah, that's it. Nothing else.
I think my biggest question about Georgetown, like Ed Cooley cut his teeth at Providence by winning on toughness, not always the best recruits, you know, be them dudes, that kind of vibe. I mean, Georgetown had none of it last year, right? Like no defense, no toughness. They had some really nice offensive talent. And, you know, it kept them in a couple games that maybe they shouldn't have been in. Can Ed Cooley establish the culture that he needs to have to win games? Because I don't think he's going to win games without reestablishing or recapturing what he had at Providence in that kind of, like, you know, just.
Is Ed Cooley on the hot seat if they have another bad year?
Define bad.
Like,
as bad. I think it'd have to be.
They went winless in conference play again this year.
Then yes, I think if really they show even some progress, I think he'll get that third year though. Like, I don't think it's a very high bar, but
he's getting a third year no matter what. Yeah, he's getting a
third year. If they go you're giving him a third year.
They gave him too much money, and I'm assuming he's on like a 5-year contract. Georgetown is not buying him out.
No.
You see how long they fucking kept Ewing for?
Yes, they have to have 20 and give him a new contract. Mike, they had to have learned from that. They can't just keep rolling out 2-18 players. I just don't understand. If Ed Cooley can't coach at Georgetown and he's 2-18 again, fire him. He's that dude. Be them dude. Fire them dudes.
They won't be 2-18 next year. They won't be 2-18 next
they
year.
They went winless in conference play
for too long to say he forgot how to coach because he went down the 95 corridor. Like, come on. Like, you don't just forget how to coach.
He didn't win a game in conference play.
You went to the Sweet 16 like 3 years ago.
They beat DePaul twice. They're
DePaul's
in
not in the conference. What are
They're
we
in the conference.
Lock
they
in.
Exist.
What the fuck are we doing? Lock in. DePaul sucks. Georgetown was just as bad, but somehow we forgot him. It's like
it was
somebody
a bad year, but he didn't forget how to coach.
Someone commits a double murder, and we now are talking about the other murderer as being fine. Bring it back to OJ, Chris. Like, they're both bad people.
Wow. What are we doing here? What are we doing?
The Xavier Musketeers are next on the docket.
My lucky stabbing cap.
Try to reel that back in. familiar face coming back. About as old as Tyler Zach Fremantle is going to be coming back for Xavier next season. That should be big for them. They have some departures from Xavier, of course. Pretty much everyone. I would go through the list, but there's a lot of names that I'm not going to try my hand at pronouncing right now. But yeah, Xavier's got Fremantle coming back, which is huge. His veteran leadership will be much needed there. They have Marcus Foster there, who's will be a solid Big East player, I think. Michael thinks he's coming in off the bench. I think he can be a serviceable starter for Xavier, depending on, of course, what else they get. He was a 1 year of eligibility left player at Furman, but looking back on their season, we can finally start going back. Finishing as low as they did, I don't think is representative of the season that they had. McKnight and Oliveri, McKnight's coming back, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a ton of fun. It'll be interesting to see what guard they get in the portal to pair up with him. Send it to Tyler. Yeah, I like sending this one to Tyler, big Xavier guy over there. Looking back on the season, what do you take away from the season they had?
it's always going to be the season of what if for Xavier if you had those two guys healthy with the three guards, Claude, McKnight, and Oliveri. What could they have been? It seems like they just kind of let the European bigs be placeholders for Jerome Hunter and Zach Fremantle because once they were healthy, they're all transferring out now, which is, you know, very interesting. But it'll always be the season of what if. I do think we saw that a team that isn't wildly talented but's well coached can be really good despite having some adversity. And they were really, you know, they were able to be 500 in conference play pretty much or throughout the season despite, you know, a lot of adversity. Do I now kick it to someone, Tommy? How's this work?
Ooh, yeah, popcorn.
Kick it to someone randomly.
All right, Chris.
You know, we were all down at the Big East tournament, and watching Claude, McKnight, and Oliveri, you know, go play for a couple days, I am surprised they only won the amount of games they did in conference. Like, that team, all despite Hunter and Fremantle being injured, they did have a fair amount of talent in the backcourt, and Usman, despite maybe popular belief, I thought was a fine center. And it just, I don't know, it didn't really work out. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. A lot of it is dependent on, there's still a couple big decisions to be made at Xavier as far as the roster being built. Marcus Foster will be a fine guy to bring into the fold from Furman, but the big one's down low because you can't really play Fremantle at the five to me. And so you need to find some type of, you know, five in the portal or a freshman or something to come in and be a solid piece in the Big East. There's too many good bigs in this league. We'll go Ryan.
I want to go back to when Tyler said Xavier was really good this year. They were really good. I mean, I feel like that might have been a little bit of an over exaggeration.
They won one more Big East tournament game than Butler. That's pretty good.
What's that for?
Is anybody else at all concerned about Sean Miller's success in the portal? Now, he got Quincy Oliveri, which is one of the great gets.
And Sule Boom.
Love him.
Yeah, he did get Sule Boom. But this past year, he hit the portal really hard, and he got guys like Lazar Djokovic early. You know, Sasha Chana got it at the end of the offseason. It was kind of a emergency. Jerome Hunter, not coming back. But, you know, he whiffed on a lot of guys. He didn't he had no success developing Cam Kraft, Reed Ducharme, who are guys that he inherited from Travis Steele. I don't know. I think Sean Miller is a great coach. And as good as his first season was at Xavier, I think that there are some questions after his performance last year. I don't know. Just a thought. What do you guys think? Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I will be lower on Xavier than most. I've seen them in some preseason top 20, way too early top 25s. I just want to step here and point out they have five players on the roster right now, something like that. That's not enough to field a team. So I'm going to need to see the full roster before I start putting them in the top 25 or anything like that. Also, we don't know when Fremantle and Hunter are going to be back. Are they actually going to be back for the beginning of the season or are they not? And I also don't think Fremantle and Hunter is as like incredible, like top best front court in the league, like I feel like some people seem to think they are. I think they're a little worse than that. So, I mean, could they be? Absolutely. Like, you're returning two veterans, two guys who are like 35 years old. That's good for college basketball. But yeah. And then I think David McKnight's actually a really solid point guard. I think he looked really good last year. He was good at facilitating, but I think Foster's going to be a good Big East bench player. He's a really good slasher. That's probably going to take a tick down because you're going up against bigger, better athletes from the SoCon to the Big East. I watched a lot of SoCon ball. So, yeah, but I don't know. I think there's definitely reason for optimism at Xavier, but yeah, I'm still going to have some questions. It's a team I'm probably going to be lower on than most entering next season. That could make me look foolish because I look foolish a lot. I'm assuming everyone else has spoken but Sarah. So Sarah, I'm popcorning it to you.
I mean, what? How long has Sean? I'm like blanking out. How long has Sean Miller been the coach?
That's
three. This is coming in his third season, right?
Yeah, he's going into his third.
I mean, I feel like that's when a lot of coaches, you either see them make it or break it, is their third season. They either keep going with the wins, like kind of like Ewing did the same thing. He was fine in his first season, and then he sucked afterwards. It's the same for Sean Miller. They won the NIT, his first season, right? Or that was the old coach?
Yeah, the old coach won the NIT. Miller took him to the Sweet 16.
time does not exist anymore. So sorry. But I mean, I feel like since it's his third season, you have to kind of see like where the portal kind of takes him, because if he's, it's also the portal so different from last season to this season, I feel like, because NIL has grown so much over the season, certain guys might not even want to go to a school because of that anymore. So I think he kind of has to play the field a little bit more and kind of solidify some guys. But if he can get a good enough roster to start the season off, he should be fine. But, you know, I don't think he's going to be as – I think that Xavier may win a few more games this season. I'm kind of surprised with their record, honestly. I didn't even realize it till I was hopping on with you guys how, like, in between they – like, they how low they were.
Just a quick reminder, Zach Fremantle probably was going to make second team All Big East 2 years ago before
maybe the first team.
Yeah, I don't think he was in the running for first team.
It was that year with first team. Yeah, it was Adama struggled a little bit, and then there was a questions, but
so it'd be interesting. He was playing the best ball of his career when he got hurt. So how much fun would it be to watch him play like a five out offense with Zach Fremantle, like?
But can you run Jerome Hunter? Like, Jerome Hunter's not an outside threat. No. So,
yeah, you'd have to have Jerome Hunter backing him up or something.
I do think we have some rose-colored glasses on for Jerome Hunter because we all are wishing him the best. You know, he has a very serious injury, you know, that he comes back from. But I do – you know, Jerome Hunter is a sixth man, ideally, for this team. He is not a elite rim protector, 4-5. He comes off the bench, and he did a really serviceable job when Fremantle got hurt last year – or 2 years ago.
Are you guys also of the opinion, though, that they need to find, like, a serviceable true five, like a real big man, or no? Are they just going to roll with this Fremantle at the five deal?
I think Fremantle at the five is really, like, he's fine. I mean, he's a little small. Like, what is he, 6'10"?
Dude, he doesn't play any defense.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? It's around the rim, you're going to get cooked.
Tell us how you really feel, Tom.
St. John's just ran that last year, and that was fine.
And they didn't make the tournament.
Please stop. Everyone has always asked me, they're like, how is Patino impressed? And like that one game that he just popped off, I was sitting there and I'm just like, okay, this is
Patino, happening. Really good cook. Little known fact.
Tommy,
yeah, you're not doing this again.
Mick Cronin certified. Really good cook. Yes.
What does Mick Cronin know about
Mick Cronin's judgment now? Mick Cronin said Eric Dixon's not athletic, and we're now saying, oh, he knows pasta?
God, it took me so long to find that clip, and you guys aren't even appreciative.
Wait, Chris, send me that clip. I haven't seen it. Send it to me. Text it to me. I mean, are we going to St. John's next, or are we moving on? Who's next? I think
the Butler Bulldogs finishing at 9-11 are next. Another one of Mike's teams. He's got them scattered all around the conference. Unfortunate loss of DJ Davis. No incoming transfers yet, right, Mike? Oh, no, yesterday you got Jamie Kaiser, didn't you?
And Patrick McCaffrey.
One is not official. Official is Patrick McCaffrey. He committed yesterday. The brother of Connor McCaffrey, the son of Fran McCaffrey, all the McCaffreys at Iowa.
Do the important one.
Yeah.
What he's most known for.
What's up?
Do the one he's most known for.
Connor McCaffrey's most known for dating Caitlin Clark.
There it is. Caitlin Clark's boyfriend is in the Big East, which...
No, Caitlin Clark's brother is in the Big East.
Oh. Yeah,
her brother-in-law.
There's too many McCaffreys.
They're all in Indy, though. All of them will be in Indy.
How bad do things have to get for you to leave your dad in terms of NIL situation?
I mean, he's been there 4 years. He graduated. You probably just want, like, a change of scenery.
It's your dad. You're stuck with him for life.
Have you seen Fran McCaffrey coach?
I moved away from my dad at age 18, and let me tell you.
I moved away from my parents at 18.
I changed the scenery from your dad is a little bit of a tough comment, Mike.
I mean, he graduated.
Also, like, that kind of gives the separation of, like, now he can be his own player under other coaches because he's probably played for his dad his entire life. You know, you're getting a different coaching style now.
And look, if you can get free dinners off Caitlin Clark, I'm sorry, dog. I'm taking that shit, brother.
Well, here's my thing now. Will Caitlin Clark be at these Big East games? If so, catch me at every single one.
That's fair.
If the over-under was 1.5 total Big East games Caitlin Clark is at, I am hammering the under.
Yeah.
If it's a half, I'm hammering
the under. No. You know what? She'll be at one. Give me the over. She'll show up to a Butler game. Give me the over.
A Butler game.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to be on the Indiana Fever.
Butler fans don't want to go to Butler games, and now we're making it.
That's how they're going to get Butler fans to go to the Butler games.
See? That's toxic, Tyler.
So what Mike, what other what's going on? What's the situation with Posh?
Posh declared for the draft. I'm assuming he just wants to go through the process, see what feedback he can get from NBA teams. Maybe if he can get like a good two-way deal. I'm assuming that's something he's looking at, but I would expect Posh back. I just do. I think Telfort, honestly, considering he is an international player, he's Canadian origin, you can't really get NIL unless your team travels to another country. Then you can get NIL there. So I think his situation is a little more complicated. I still would expect him back because, let's be real, there's a way to loophole around that. I'm not smart enough to figure it out, but if Butler doesn't have people smart enough to figure that out, that's a deeper problem. But I would expect both back, but I could see Telfort going pro, especially because I think his skill set could kind of translate to pro ball. Like, I think you'd expect him to do the exact same stuff he did at Butler. So, but I would expect both of them back. I'd hope for both of them back because that definitely changes the way we look at this Butler team.
And has Andre Screen, I know there was rumblings that he may want to go pro outside of the United States. Is that what's the
situation? He announced he's returning. That's the one Rothstein scoop Butler's gotten.
Okay.
And DJ Davis is not returning, correct?
Davis's transfer is a weird situation because so what happened, I'll just give the full story that I know at least, is it just popped up from like what I believe he works for Rivals, Derek Murray, I believe is his name. He was just like, yeah, DJ Davis is transferring. Then like everyone with Butler is like, no, he's not. He hasn't told anyone he's transferring. So I'm assuming what happened was DJ Davis kept it so low key that he was transferring that he forgot to tell the people who work in compliance. So yeah, once he went out to the, it's like, oh shit, wait, I do have to like do some of this stuff. And everyone was blindsided by it. But yeah, DJ Davis, I would be very surprised if he's back. And his recruitment has been very low key. I believe he just took a visit to Washington. I believe he was scheduled to take a visit to St. John's. I believe they canceled that.
They canceled it or he canceled it?
There was some
St. John's canceled it.
I don't know if they canceled it. I know there was something going on. I don't think they ever released who canceled it.
Yeah.
I will say. Like I think they just kind of said like he's not coming anymore. Like he's not taking a tour. Because I remember hearing about that because I have some inside sources and they haven't seen him and they told me like he wasn't coming. Like they were just like they weren't having anything. So because St. John's is having a lot of tours and a lot of kids coming in the next like week and a half.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That was speculation from me solely because I do not think DJ Davis and Rick Pitino would work well at all. Then again, they had Kirk Creasa on campus who would work worse. So what do I know?
I think it's talking about Butler. You talk about the players who, you know, I mean, having Pierre Brooks committed to come back, I think we'd be remiss not to mention Pierre Brooks at least. I'm a little surprised Pierre Brooks did not at least declare for the draft because apparently no matter what your pro outlook like is, you can declare for the draft whenever you want. Chris Thedinga also has declared for the draft. He just wants feedback from the teams.
That's true.
So, but I do think building on Pierre Brooks, Posh Alexander, and I hopefully Jameel Telfort, I think Butler's going to finish in the top half of the Big East next year.
It's a bold statement.
I like it, though. Shall we move on to the Friars of Providence?
Yeah.
I'll leave this one open for the table, whoever wants to take it. Did the Friar, I guess it's kind of hard to do with Providence because of the Bryce Hopkins injury, but do we think they, with the injury, exceeded or underperformed expectations this year?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, like, I feel like they just kind of, they didn't meet or, like, like lower the expectation. I think they were just kind of, like, there. The only time that I was like, oh, maybe this Providence team's, like, really, it was during the tournament and, oh, why can't I? They almost beat Marquette. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I was with you guys during that game. And then I left like right before because they were winning. And then, I mean, the team was fine. I feel like there was nothing like if you had Bryce Hopkins, I think that you would have exceeded the expectations of so many people. But because this is his second time being injured because he really didn't play last season too, right?
No, he was first team Big East last season.
He was first team Big East.
What am I thinking of? Someone else was injured. I'm thinking Villanova. Never mind. I confused players in my head. I'm thinking of Justin Moore. That's what I was confusing it with. I mean, if he was not injured, that team probably could have beat Marquette and probably been one of the top three of the Big East. But
yeah, their defense when Bryce Hopkins played, even when they didn't, when he didn't was really good. It was ranked as one of the better units in the conference on KenPom. I remember Mike and I talking about it on our show, where we said they could be a top three unit offense or defense in the conference, Marquette's defense. But yeah, I mean, this is like one of the other teams that we've talked about this year. It's a big what if for Providence. I mean, they were electric at home. They played like a bunch of home games before they had to go on the road. They played Michigan State on the road, but their next home game after that was like 2 days before Christmas. But yeah, Devin Carter, I guess the story of the season just kind of willed this team along and all the way through the Big East tournament. I mean, they were battling with Marquette in there for a little bit in that game, but Marquette's just a better team. So they took over and just kind of ran out of gas at the end. But the fact that they were even considered for an NCAA tournament bid, I think goes to show the will of Devin Carter and what he had on this team this year.
That's the concerning part, right? Because how much of this was just willed by Devin Carter, who will not be back next year? Because that's where I get really concerned. How good are those pieces around? You're going to rely on Jaden Pierre. You're going to rely on Corey Floyd Jr. I mean, the two best players on your team last year aren't back, in Josh Adoro and Devin Carter. Kim English has his work cut out for him, but everything I saw from Kim English this year, his vibes are guy can coach. So let's, I'm doing a vibe check, right? I'm doing a vibe check.
Vibe commissioner is right there. And you're just going to talk about vibes?
I'm talking about vibes. And I do worry about them though, without literally their heart and soul, Devin Carter.
Yeah, I see the point. And obviously the roster is thin, but I don't see how you can see this as anything but a success for the Providence season. I mean, after, you know, where they were this time last year, getting robbed of their, you know, supposed lifetime coach, and then they have to scramble, hire a guy who's really had no success at the college level, Kim English, into where they end up the season playing against Marquette, probably make the NCAA tournament. If they win that game, they send them to overtime. I mean, and along the way, you lose your first team all Big East player. I mean, pretty incredible season if you're a Providence fan. The community is more engaged there than pretty much anywhere else in the Big East. I personally see it as a really positive outlook and going forward for Providence.
Ooh, Mike, I want to hear your take on that.
I'm not optimistic on the roster next year. I think Hopkins is excellent, but I think surrounding him, I think you lose a lot. Like, I think the downgrade from Asandoko to Oduro, I think is substantial. I think Oduro is actually really promising Big East big, and I think Asandoko is just potential. But that said, the St. Joe's team was kind of better when he was off the floor. So we're expecting that guy to be an effective Big East big. I still have some questions there. And I don't think Bensley Joseph is going to fully replace Devin Carter. Like, I just don't. I think he's a fine – I think he was like a third or fourth option on that Miami team. That might even be a little high. But he was like a good role player, and he's like a good defender, according to a couple people that I trust. So I fully back that. But I just think they have a lot to replace. And I think Devin Carter masked a lot of holes on this team after the Bryce Hopkins injury, of course, which changed everything, to be clear. Like, I agree with Sarah when she said, I think they probably met expectations. They didn't exceed or underperform because of the injury, but I think they were on track to probably exceed expectations, finish towards the top of this conference. But then the injury kind of changed everything, and it wasn't a particularly deep team because English took the job and just wasn't enough time to like get roster guys going. And they had Will McNair transfer just before the season began, and they had Justin Fernandez tear his ACL. So,
well, Mike, look at it as a 365-day, not just, you know, the actual basketball season. They didn't know if they were returning Devin Carter. They didn't know if they were returning Bryce Hopkins. They were supposed to lose Jaden Pierre. I mean, where they were this time last year was like panic mode. And the way Kim English was able to keep that roster together, and then where he was able to take them to the cusp of the NCAA tournament, many people would argue they should have been in the NCAA tournament. I don't know. I think we're undercrediting them, trying to stand up for my guys.
I think it's a successful year. My worry is the future outlook. It's not the if it was a successful year or not. I think, once Bryce Hopkins got changed, we had to change the expectations. But I think the outlook for Providence, and maybe that's what we're getting into, what is the outlook for Providence? We're going to rely on Bryce Hopkins. Bryce Hopkins didn't even look that great in non-con play this year. He slimmed down a lot. He wasn't fantastic. I mean, you can write that off as a small sample size, but it's also the only sample size we have for Bryce Hopkins last year.
I mean, before the season, though, right? Like, he was my pick for Big East Player of the Year last year. Yeah. He was so good 2 years ago. And then last year, you know, his offense didn't really get clicking in the non-con, but defensively he was a stalwart. Their offense, their defense was fantastic with him on the floor. They smoked Marquette the one game Bryce Hopkins was available for. He's really, really good, and I hope people don't forget that just because he, you know, wasn't shooting super well in a, you know, 12 game sample size or whatever it was this year.
Well, then Chris, I'll push back. What's more indicative? He didn't play at Kentucky, so we're going to we don't really have a large sample size of Bryce Hopkins being really good. We have the one season, we have 12 games of him being mad this year. We have Kentucky where he wasn't good enough to play. Like, I get what you're saying, but what if that's what Bryce Hopkins is? He just had a really good season that one time.
Nope.
If he was bringing up a
call from yesterday. This motherfucker said Bryce Hopkins was better than Devin Carter yesterday. And now you're pulling this card? What are we doing here, lad?
Slander Providence.
That's radio, baby. I do love Bryce Hopkins.
You guys are way low. I think Kim English has earned the benefit of the doubt after his first season avoiding disaster. And I don't know what the roster looks like. You guys are right. But all right.
Responds to like three of your tweets, and all of a sudden you're like hanging pictures of him in your apartment.
I was impressed with what I saw. What can I, he respects game. I respect his game. What can I say?
Kim English, stop responding to his tweets. His head's getting big.
Somebody commented he's a brick. He shot 41% in conference play from three a year ago. Okay, when he's on, Bryce Hopkins is fantastic.
Or is he a brick?
I guess we'll see.
That's my burner.
All right, who's next? We got St. John's next, Tommy.
Coming up next, we have Villanova. 10-10, finished right below St. John's at 11-9 in conference play. We talked earlier about a team that threw a lot of money at people and might not have worked out.
Name names.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I mean, disappointing season for Villanova. There's no other way to cut it. Second disappointing season in a row that ended with first round NIT exit. Didn't really make much. They almost lost to DePaul in the Big East tournament first round. The heroics of Justin Moore saved them. Moving forward, already leaving is Trey Patterson. Eric Dixon just declared for the draft, but he's keeping his eligibility open. They got four or five spots to fill on the roster, and it's going to be tough. But they did just get a commitment in Tyler Perkins today from the University of Penn, at 22-6 the first time they played. This is a make or break year for Kyle Neptune. I mean, it's a huge year, and I want to see what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Yeah, if he doesn't succeed this year, you're going to have to wonder, obviously Neptune's future, but also how much support is continued to give as far as the NIL situation of Villanova. They spent a ton of money last year for really no results. So this is a big one. This is a big year, and they have a lot to turn over. A lot of it is dependent on Eric Dixon, if he comes back to Villanova or not. I assume he will, but hey, you never know. I don't know. It's a big year for Villanova.
Yeah, I don't know why Villanova fans are so down. Now they're only 12 months away from the end of the Kyle Neptune era, and we get to get Dunleavy or Halkovic. So, you're getting closer every day. You got to have one more terrible year, and then you're going to move on. So,
I want to play devil's advocate. If Neptune has a great season? What are fans going to come back and say? Just like to be devil's advocate, do you think that that Villanova can turn it around and be one of the top teams in the Big East?
No.
I think the funniest possible outcome is probably Kyle Neptune having like a really good season. I'm sorry, Tommy, you can plug your ears for a second. And then losing in the first round of the tournament. I think that is the funniest possible outcome, is them being like a three seed and then just getting smoked in the first round by like Stephen F. Austin. I think that is the funniest possible outcome.
Just wanted to be devil's advocate really quickly, just for fun.
That's called the Georgetown special, the Patrick Ewing special, Mike?
No, that is called the Jalen Thompson III special.
Winless in conference play, they win the Big East tournament out of nowhere, Villanova, and they have to keep Kyle Neptune.
Three-year extension.
Three-year extension.
I mean, I think it'll be good to finally get all of his guys in there. I mean, not that he inherited a bad roster by any means, but he's bringing in his freshman that he's recruiting now, and that's a positive for Kyle Neptune, I think.
I will say I do like the freshman class. I am higher on Matt Hodge than most seem to be. I think he's really skilled. I don't think you're going to get many fours who, especially as freshmen, who are as skilled, I think, as Hodge is. I don't know if you want to start him day one, but I really like his skill set. And I think Josiah Mosley's a player too.
Yeah, it's tough for Neptune. He hasn't had any good freshmen. Like, no five-star freshmen have come to Villanova over the last 2 years. You know, so finally he's getting some talent.
I'm really trying for Tommy not to have riled me up right there. He's suggesting that it might be good for him to get less Jay Wright guys in there and more Kyle Neptune guys in there. That might be a recipe for success.
Oh my God.
Don't rile me. I don't want to get riled up about this.
I'm looking for positives here, Ty. You know,
Tommy, the positive is what Ryan said. You're 12 months away from getting out of jail.
Yeah, that's I can't say that, Ty. You know this.
You can't say it. I'll say it for you. I'll translate. Tommy,
No.
I mean, it's not questionable that Neptune's the worst coach in conference. We have a conference of amazing coaches and Kyle Neptune, right?
His
Tyler philosophy. Perkins, though, it could be fantastic.
I am high about that.
He took over. Clark Slackert is the main guy at Penn. Slackert was injured for like half the year, especially early conference play. And so Perkins was the head honcho there for a string of games. And he did fantastic in that role. So I think he'll translate to the Big East pretty well. Actually, probably better than Jordan Dingell did, which is, you know, no small praise from me.
Don't shame Dingell like that. Don't do that.
Believe me, this is no shade to Jordan Dingell. I love
it. Don't do that.
Show her the shrine. Show her the Jordan Dingell shrine behind you.
We love Dingell. So when he could play, I think that a lot of people don't realize how injured he was and like how really like he needed to explode, and he exploded at the right time. It just wasn't throughout the beginning of the season. The end of the season, and you could hear it and during the Big East tournament media day, you could finally see like the friendships, because all these guys were like looking at each other like, oh, we're here. We're just kind of here. Weren't friends, weren't brothers till like March.
I'm not going to lie. That's actually a really good transition, because next is St. John's, right, Tommy?
You need to do an ad read.
You do need to do an ad read, Mike.
But first, yes, let us hear from our friends over at Rhythm. March may be over, but Rhythm's AI-based model continues to absolutely dominate. Listen, if you lost money betting on fights last night like I did, you could use this, so you should listen. Rhythm is the AI sports betting app for player props and game picks. Rhythm stands at the forefront of innovation, offering sports enthusiasts a cutting-edge tool to elevate their betting experience. The app leverages data sets, historical trends, and player statistics, and so much more to help craft the perfect picks for you specifically. If you head to the link in our bio and on house-enterprise.com, don't forget the dash, you can sign up for free to find a set of picks perfectly tailored for you. Filter Rhythm suggestions by teams, props, and so much more to help create the perfect pick that fit your fandom. With the college basketball season now complete, Rhythm is here to help you compete and help you win through the push for professional basketball playoffs and all the other sports that happen that aren't college basketball. Download Rhythm, that is R-I-T-H-M-M, create your account, find your perfect picks, and win big. Note, House Enterprise and Rhythm are not responsible for any lost wages on picks you make. Gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. That is 1-800-GAMBLER. St. John's, right? They were the fifth seed, right?
Numbers on speed dial for Mike.
Dude, Jalen Turner, just follow up, man. Just follow up. And, oh my God, do you get, I don't know, this is very inside MMA here. Yan Xiaonan was out at the end of the first round. I had a Wei Li by sub bet. That bitch should have cashed. She was out. And then they woke her back up with, fuck, man. Oh, my God. Those two hurt. That I got stabbed in the chest. But, yeah, that number is on speed now.
Are you rocking back and forth?
Good. Someone else is going to say it.
That one hurt, man. That one is giving me flashbacks. That is up there for my worst beat of all time.
All right, Sarah, take us away with the Johnnies.
Okay. So, I mean, we don't really have too much going on right now. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming transfers coming to look at campus, talk to Patino, all that kind of fun stuff. There's only three guys in the portal. I love Drisa. I wish him so well. I think that he got his playing time, so now he can kind of show coaches, hey, this is what I want to do. He hasn't committed anywhere yet. I'm waiting for that. I think he's going to do great. Other than that, we have Cruz Davis and Glenn Taylor. Glenn, I am very sad to see. Wish he was staying for another season. I think that if he was staying, he would be a very crucial part of this roster. However, I've talked to other people about this. Him and RJ, when RJ was injured, Glenn was the guy that they needed. And now that RJ is now healthy, that's who Patino's going to go with more over Glenn. Like, sad to say, I wish that Glenn was staying. I think that he'd do amazing here, at least for another season. And then Cruz Davis just committed to Hofstra. He was medically redshirted. I didn't see him. He didn't travel with the team. He didn't do anything. So we'll see how he does at Hofstra. I really don't know. You know, I have no expectations for the kid because he didn't play at all. So, and then you have Joel and Danis who are going into the PIT. Either I think it's next week. I believe it's next week or later this week. I know it's coming up. I don't remember the exact dates. Excited to see where they land. I know Chris and Dingle were both kind of talking, trying to get waivers as well. I don't think that's going to happen. Would love to see them come back. Doubt it's going to happen, though, because it hasn't happened for anyone else. So it'd be very surprising if it did happen for them. Also, everyone trying to get Patino to leave. He's not leaving. He is staying. That he's not going anywhere. And I was thinking about this before I came on. He did his thing at Kentucky. Everyone's like, oh, he's going to come back. Why would he come back when he already accomplished something there? The whole reason for him to go to St. John's is to do something here. And thank you for my St. John's rant.
Yeah, the thing about Rick Pitino is he's never lied about anything and or never done anything scummy in his personal life. So I believe him when he says that.
Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of Iona fans saying the exact same thing right now. Like, no, he's not going to leave Iona. He came back from Greece. This is where he's going to retire.
Well, that's no. It's different. I'll say that much. It's different.
God, it's always different.
Well, so you got to think about this. Shanley, so our St. John's president hired Cooley when Cooley and Patino were the running to be the Providence head coach. When Shanley and I had spoken to Shanley last year during basketball season and being like, what's the idea for Anderson if they don't win? And he goes, we just need to make money. It's not anything against Anderson. It's just, this is a business. And if they're not going to win, they're not going to stay. And that's why Patino got called up is he had that connection with Shanley and Patino grew up 25 minutes away. He went to the same high school as half the kids here.
But he's like, different. He won't do it.
I don't think he's going to leave because he said multiple. I'm sticking to this so hardcore. I will die on this hill because Patino has given so much to this community and to like the St. John's basketball community of like, there's life again. I don't think he's leaving anytime soon. He's even said that it's a 6-year contract. He'll be 78 when he retires, 77, 78. I'm so sorry. He wants to leave again.
I hope you're right. I'm just saying his track record suggests, but
divine providence, baby.
It obviously would not surprise me if Patino retires before that contract is up, just because he's an
old man. Yeah.
But my favorite all-time Patino quote might be the fact that one randomly when he was at Iona, he said his biggest career regret is leaving Providence. Mm-hmm. I just think it's funny because he uses that quote for every single school. Like, oh, man, if I was just at Kentucky for that much longer, oh, by God, we would have won so much. Or, oh, by God, if I just stuck around with the Knicks, man. So, Rick Pitino, that's my guy. Also, to Sarah's earlier point, before Rhythm saved our lives, use Rhythm, by the way, it's great. Those guys didn't have time to connect, whatever that. You're going to bring in 10 new transfers again, so feels like the same situation.
I think it's going to be different this season because I think the biggest thing was – those guys were older. They had been on these teams for years. So you have, you had six seniors on this team who all played so differently. And the only two guys who really saw any action like against each other was Dingle and Ledlam. They were the only two who like saw each other in conference play, who kind of knew what they were like. But even then, they weren't friendly. Like, they weren't friends with each other. They all have very different personalities. I've seen them around campus. And the younger guys get along more just because this is their first time ever being at the college campus, D1 level. These other guys have been doing it for years. So it's hard to make that connection, especially in the Big East when you're moving to Queens, you're with Patino, and you have all this pressure from the community. Like, you're not going to want to – it's hard to break down those shells of certain guys. I mean, Dingle and Ledlam even said it before the Big East tournament that, you know, they're just being friends. Like, they're just breaking down those barriers now. Like, Dingle's a quiet guy. And by February, that's when they finally, like, you saw the hot streaks after that Seton Hall game. You saw that hot streak because they finally broke down all those barriers between each other and became friends. And, like, truly became friends with each other. So.
Yeah, we'll see. They're targeting some interesting names in the portal. Cliff Amarui and Kirk Creasa would both be fascinating fits.
Great.
I don't know. They should be. St. John's
I don't know
has
if Cliff's
the resources.
Gonna stay. I don't know if he's going to. I mean, Cliff is a love. I don't think he's going to on. I'm not sure. I've heard some things. I don't know if he's actually going to be coming to St. John's. I would love him to. Because obviously we need someone. Zuby, as of right now, staying. I think that Patino, he works very well with Patino. But I think they need to have someone to replace him if Zuby gets in foul trouble, because we don't have that guy right now. We need someone like Cliff to take over that spot. So
here's my hot take. I think RJ Lewis and Brady Dunlap will be one of the best wing duos in the conference next year, with another year to mature. Dunlap mm-hmm. showed great flashes. We all know what Lewis showed flashes of. There's not a lot of wings in college basketball because they all go to the NBA so quickly. They could be a lot of fun to watch.
I think the only concern is RJ not living up to the expectation. And what I mean by this is either getting injured again and not being able to maintain like him health, like his health, because he did have shin splints. And I've coming from someone who was a dancer and a runner, I've had my fair share of shin splints, and they are painful as a MFer all the time. But I think Brady, if he can work over the summer, and I see him honestly, like kind of what you said, Ryan, I can see him being a top player in the Big East next year. He's committed. Him and Sim, I think both are really committed to what Patino wants out of them. And I think because they are the only two freshmen, that they got the first hand of like, oh, we're ready. Like, we want to be here.
Yeah.
I like that.
She nailed it.
We have a national – she did nail it. We have a national champion coming up next that we have to talk about. Not the UConn Huskies, but the National Invitational Tournament champions, Seton Hall Pirates. And the job Shaheen Holloway did this year with that team, I'm not sure Seton Hall could have played better. I think he got the most out of his guys that were there. Unfortunately, Dre Davis has since entered the portal. Who else has entered the portal on that team? Let's go to this lovely transfer strong, tracker.
Hutchins Everett entered the other day.
And then strong rumors that Kadari is going to enter.
Strong rumors. Yeah, I mean, it's the NIL landscape nowadays, which is tough for teams like Seton Hall. But hell of a job this year. They played hard until the last game. It was really special. It was really special. Where did they finish in KenPom? You should probably have had this up.
Like in the 60s, 60 or 50s maybe?
50 on the dot.
Above University of Virginia.
Did University of Virginia make the tournament in Seattle?
We're not doing this.
Well, there's no way they put them in the tournament over Seattle. On what metric?
13-7 in Big East play and didn't get in the freaking tournament. 13-7.
No, you can
at least UVA put up a good fight in the tournament.
They beat UConn
by 15. Smoked them. I think, right?
It doesn't count because Donovan Klingon got hurt.
Donovan Klingon played 14 minutes or less in 6 different games this year, but the one time he does it against Seton Hall, we'd say that doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
I'm very Team Cassidy on this one.
Clearly.
The committee are the stupidest people, and I'm so glad that UConn won another national championship to say fuck you to them.
I mean, I'm in the same anger of St. John's not getting their bid. I was just sitting there, and I had the way everyone apologized to me. For St. John's not getting in that first week after Selection Sunday, I had at least 30 people come up and be like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, thank you so much. I'm in a state of depression. I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, you could tell how much it meant to the players to win the NIT for Seton Hall after not getting that bid. Clearly, they took it personally. They had the opportunity to show up the committee, and they took it and they ran with it. And it was a lot of fun to watch them shove it in their face.
And it was a great game, too, against Indiana State, which was pretty much like a home game for Indiana State.
But this year, I mean, you look at the roster and the cupboard is pretty bare, right? Especially if Goodari leaves, like there's no contributors really back.
Isaiah Coleman to take a jump.
Maybe. Isaiah Coleman could be good. And I guess Jaquan Sanders is the other guy that played in like any games. But that's it, right? So like they have a lot of work to do and they don't. As a school, I don't think they have a ton of resources in the NIL department as far as other Big East teams go. So it's going to be an uphill battle for Shaw. And I wonder, you know, we talked about this, I think, off air one day, but I wonder how many years before Shaw kind of gets annoyed with that situation at Seton Hall.
Yeah, talked about how much the team means to him, the loyalty, you know, being a Seton Hall guy. He wants to be a Seton Hall guy for life and you respect the hell out of that. But, I mean, how many years can you keep doing this just to have all your best guys stolen from you because they come in with dumb money. Yep. And then you got to do it again with another, you know, team of misfits. And credit the dude. I mean, he cut his teeth at St. Peter's, taking no talent to incredible heights. And I'm not betting against him, but geez, it's tough ass.
I think at this point, I'm in the boat of I will bet against Shaheen Holloway when I see anything to support, I should bet against Shaheen Holloway. I think that the players kind of got sick of it this year too. The resources that Chris is talking about, because I think Dre Davis wanted to stay. He freaking stayed when his twin brother went to another school. I mean, like we're talking about players that he's not his twin, right? Oh, younger. But you know, we've seen these kids show loyalty, and eventually they're going to turn around and be like, "I see everybody else getting paid. I need at least some monetary compensation." Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I think a lot of them want to stay. You know, Alamir Doss stayed for 5 years in college after playing in the ACC and stayed at Seton Hall, play with Shaheen Holloway. I think he'll bring people in, but retaining them year after year is going to be really hard.
Well, you can tell the kids love Holloway. I mean, they'll run through a brick wall for Holloway. They're not leaving Holloway.
He recruited kids that were him in college. Like, those kids are perfectly made for his coaching style and for what he wanted out of this team. And kind of like Tommy said earlier, they put everything out on the floor and won and kind of said F you to the committee for not giving them a bid for the NCAA and won everything, won the NIT. Like, I think that the kids who are staying, that fire is going to seep into next season. And the kids that are coming in, they're going to see that fire from Holloway. I mean, you can see the fire from Holloway on the court anytime. I mean, walking like past him, like you can see it plain and clear that, you know, he wants to kind of show everyone like Seton Hall can do this. And my one thing too, is kind of like what you guys were saying before, the NIL. Do you think that because they won NIT this year, do you think that there's some way, shape or form that Seton Hall can try to pull in some NIL deals to keep, not, I don't want to say Holloway happy, but keep those players happy as Holloway continues to grow, like, grow with them.
I hope so. I mean, for Shaheen's sake, for the conference's sake, I would sure hope so. I have no idea how that works, though. I'm definitely not smart enough to navigate that NIL landscape and how they get those additional funding. But yeah, I mean, looking back on it, I think Seton Hall definitely exceeded expectations this year. Where were they picked in the preseason poll? Anyone remember?
Ninth.
Nice. Yeah, it's the 9 seed because that's what happened with Marquette. Mm-hmm. That's happened Seton Hall.
Yeah.
Whoever's 9 next year might have.
9th is the new first.
Mike, you're my 9th best friend.
Aw, thanks, Tyler.
But I was your 9th best friend, Tyler.
Oh, no, Tommy, you're UConn.
Ooh. Wow. Ooh. Wow. Eat shit, Ryan. Wow.
You guys can have it. Evil.
The Creighton Blue Jays up next. Going to popcorn this to Chris Thedinga because he's going to do a great job talking about Baylor Shireman and the gang.
Yeah, this one, it's a little bittersweet. This sort of feels like a little bit of the end of a certain window for Creighton basketball. With pending decisions to be made from Trey Alexander and Ryan Kalkbrenner that I expect to go a certain way. Creighton had an opportunity to do something really special this year. And hey, they made another second weekend and they did a lot of really cool things. But I don't know if they accomplished, you know, all they set out to do. They lost the first round of the Big East tournament and then it got beat in the Sweet 16 against Tennessee. They already had a string of transfers early on in the transfer portal cycle here. Josiah Dotzler, their backup point guard, Fred King, backup center, and then Jonathan Lawson, who transferred over a year before, but didn't see much run time at Creighton. Creighton has a lot of work to do here. It'll be interesting to see how they navigate it. The one thing I'll say is before last year, so 2 years ago, their problem was they weren't a great shooting team. And so when Ryan Nemhard leaves, what do they replace him with? They replace him with Stephen Ashworth, who is a fantastic shooter, and that's what he's known for. This year, they don't force a lot of turnovers. Sometimes getting into offensive sets was a struggle. They weren't great at creation, distribution. So how do they replace Trey Alexander? I don't know. Maybe they replace him with somebody that's a little bit more heady and guard forward rather than just a true shooter on the wing. So there's a lot of things Creighton will need to do, but this certainly seemed, and I'm curious your thoughts, but this certainly seemed like Creighton had a couple of years stretch where they had opportunities to do something really special in Omaha. And it kind of seems like that's starting to close a little bit.
I tend to agree with Chris from the point of, I don't know if they're going to reach, like, I mean, it's an uphill battle to find players like Shireman, Alexander, and Kalkbrenner again. And I think, I mean, obviously for next year, I don't think your expectations are going to be second weekend or going to be competing at the top of the Big East and that. But in the sense of, like, I mean, I still think they'll be a tournament team, but like maybe like they'll have this year rather than having a back-to-back, you'll have this one every 10 or so years rather than immediately. But I don't know. I think you're keeping McDermott. I think that's a really good sign because it was very clear other schools wanted to hire him and they couldn't. He wants to be there. And basketball is the biggest show in Omaha. Creighton is the biggest show in Omaha. So if you can find a couple people, give them some good stakes, both financially and like actual the Omaha stakes.
Good shot, Mike. Good
dessert, yeah.
Boo.
You're an idiot.
Boo.
Wow. So toxic.
Chris, what's the vibe with Kalkbrenner? Is he staying? Is he going? What's up with him?
So with Trey, I would say a 98% chance he's gone. With Kalkbrenner, I've been a little bit more optimistic. I'd still lean, 75-25 that he's gone. There's been some rumblings that he may enter the transfer portal. I think there is no credence to those rumors. If he's gone, it's because he's going to the league. Creighton can pay him a fair amount of money to stay, and I think he loves Omaha. He's going to get married this year. And that's the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is the other situation is Stephen Ashworth, who's, he's going to be a father this year. Wow. And taking away the basketball stuff, like, life matters. And so maybe with that, happening, maybe he doesn't come back and he wants to spend more time in that way. I don't know.
Like, now people are temporary. Basketball's forever.
That's facts.
Do what's best for the viewer.
I don't care about you. Do what's best for me. I'm really high on actually some of the pieces coming back. Mason Miller is a knockdown shooter. Stephen Ashworth, I really liked what we saw from Jason Green in certain situations last year. I actually think that Creighton, it's not going to be the same when you bring in those four or losing those four guys or three of them. But, those players, you have more of a core right now than a lot of Big East teams do. We just said we can't name, like, anyone on Butler who's coming back for sure or Georgetown. Those are two random teams that I'm talking about. DePaul. But like, I think that you guys actually have like a core, and maybe I'm just optimistic because I've seen it the last few years, but nothing to me suggests that Creighton is going to be basement dwellers or even, bottom half of the conference. I think that this team with McDermott, Ashworth, Green, Miller, maybe Kalkbrenner would be top.
Is Miller confirmed back? Isn't his dad the coach elsewhere now?
His dad is still at Creighton. He applied for the Fresno State job and got declined.
The other assistant coach just got a different job yesterday, Tommy. That might be who you're thinking of.
That's who I'm thinking of, yeah.
Also, shout out incoming freshman McAndrew, Jackson McAndrew, who was one of the biggest stock risers of the Peach Jam last year. He's like a big wing, great shooter. No surprise going to Creighton there. He could be a really nice piece. Yeah, I think they have a lot of talent out there. And, you know, your piece about the window closing, I think, is completely fair. But couldn't you have said the same thing 3 years ago when Marcus Zagorowski, Christian Bishop, I mean, I think you lost all five of your starters, Mitch Ballack, Damian Jefferson, Denzel Mahoney, yep, all leave. And Greg McDermott doesn't miss a beat. And he takes three freshmen. And, you know, if it's not for Ryan Cockburner getting injured in the round of 64.
Yep. Newell, yes, against San Diego, you're right, San Diego State.
They would have had a really good shot to make the Sweet 16. So, I don't know. Again, these coaches have earned the benefit of the doubt. McDermott hasn't had a bad year in a long time. He's got some talent. He doesn't need to have the most talented team. He's a really good coach.
There's certainly a floor that's been established at Creighton.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Creighton's only had one, like, really bad year in the Big East where they won, like, 5-6 games. But other than that, they've been atop the conference. So I feel like you just kind of have to expect them to be around that range. And then pending some of the other roster additions, you can move them from maybe 5th to, like, 3rd or 6th or whatever you need to put them. But you mentioned the name Christian Bishop. I have to bring this up every single time you hear Christian Bishop. Bishop entered the transfer portal because his camp was convinced he could play the 3, and that's how he would get to the pros. He ended up transferring to Texas to be the backup 5 rather than leaving Creighton where he would have been the
starter. He thought he could play the 3? Christian Bishop couldn't shoot.
Correct.
Wasn't he like 6'10"?
He's like 6'8". He was an undersized big.
Okay.
Part of that, I think, also is that he sucked the Kalkbrenner writing on the wall a little bit, that was going to chew into his playing time.
He also had no handle, right?
Also had no handles. Well, he was in high school. He was a little bit smaller. He played guard, but like a point forward type thing.
This is as bad as Posh Alexander declaring for the draft. That.
Why we no?
All right, moving on. Again, we have the Marquette Golden Eagles talking about the end of an era, the end of the Tyler Kolek and Oso Iguodaro era at Marquette. And this beginning of the Cam Jones show at Marquette, obviously a contributor the last few years, but he's riding solo right now, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Shaka's methodology and thoughts towards the transfer portal. I think he'll have to dip his toes in there this year for sure. They only have 2 incoming freshmen. It's going to be really interesting to see what Marquette's going to be this year. I think I have them in the same boat as Creighton. Like, I don't think that they're going to be a bottom half of the conference team, but certainly not fair to put the same expectations on him this year.
I just want to say this first before I let anyone else speak. Does Shaka forget that his best player and the guy who won Big East Player of the Year was a transfer? Does he? Because Tyler Kolek played a year at George Mason.
No transfers at Marquette.
Okay.
Never.
I was going to ask because I don't remember. Tyler Kolek is just going to the draft, right? Yeah, he gave up his eligibility. Yeah.
Kolek and
Osson. I mean, I don't like Kolek personally, so I'm kind of happy to see him go. That's my own personal beef. I mean, I'm intrigued to see where he goes, though, because he's a good player, but there's a lot of guys better than him that are also declaring.
When you can control a game like Tyler Kolek can control a game, when you just have that like calming presence, I feel like the way he played, the way he was used at Marquette, that kind of is basically how you're going to use him in the NBA. And I think he'd be a serviceable bench guard. I don't think like you want him starting on a playoff team, but like if he's your backup point guard and like you just kind of need someone who's like a calming presence, yeah, I think you could. I don't watch the NBA a ton, so like you're getting this from an idiot, but yeah, I think it could work.
Every time you talk.
Wow, yeah, Tyler. Wow.
No, he's going to find the open man. He reads defenses at a high level. He's a crafty finisher around the rim, and he can shoot the 3 ball. I agree. His athleticism probably keeps him from being a starter, but I think there's a role for him.
I will die for Tyler Kolek. He's one of my favorite players and people to ever come to the Big East. So I cannot talk about any of this unbiasedly. Tyler Kolek has a special place. So, but Tom, I do want to push back a tiny bit. Marquette is the only team, I think, in the Big East where I could name their starting 5 right now, where that's very, like, just to have that stability. I mean, you know, Ben Gold is probably going to be the starting center. Joplin, Chase Ross, Stevie Mitchell, and
Sean.
And, no, who's that? Yeah, Cam Jones. Cam Jones. Cam Jones and Sean Jones. I think Marquette's in a better position and might be – I mean, obviously, we need to see what happens with the portal. But Marquette might be in a position to be named the Big East champion preseason.
You think so?
I think if the Big East – if you're talking about the preseason poll, Marquette would be number one right now. Oh. I mean, that's also a stupid thing to say because I'm saying that we have no idea what's going to happen in the portal. But, like Xavier has four players on their team. We can't –
Dan Hurley should be number one until he loses to a non-conference opponent. That doesn't work with Kansas, but ignore the Kansas game. Anyhow, are we just assuming Cam Jones is going to be the point guard next year? Or
see, yeah, I don't think Cam Jones is a true point. So
he's definitely not a true point.
Sean Jones can run point. He's so quick.
He is, but then do you run Mitchell or Ross off the bench again, or do you try to run Joplin off the bench and go really small? And also, I think Gold's more of a four than a five at the college level. So
I have heard a lot of confidence that Ben Gold will be the starting five next year by people who know more than me. But that doesn't mean that, you know.
I just keep DMing on that.
Dear Shaka, who's the starting five? Dear Shaka. it could be wrong, but I'm just saying that's what I'm hearing from people who know more than me.
Never forget the text of Shaka just sitting in front of Tommy and Michael at Big East tournament and me turning around being like making eye contact with him while I'm on the floor. I'm like, that's interesting.
He's vibing. Like, look, if media people aren't going to show up, let Shaka just chill there for a bit. And then the Marquette players would just kind of walk back and forth through the stands. That was pretty cool. Respect to them. They were just vibing. I want to catch a game.
Shaka was chopping it up with Jim Calhoun for a little bit.
Dude. Yeah.
That was cool.
One concerning thing, though, is that Stevie Mitchell and Sean Jones—if those are two of your starting guards—you
can't shoot.
They both can't shoot. They're 25% three-point shooters.
That's because Stevie Mitchell's taking tough shots because he has to for his team.
It's called the glue guy. Chris, ever heard of it?
That's my bad. He's a fantastic shooter.
All right, watch him.
But they're not – I mean, Sean Jones can't start. They'll run – if they run Cam at the point and then Stevie at the two, they're going to run Chase Ross at the three. Chase Ross has to start for this team and Joplin at the four. You also can get away with it because Ben Gold can spread the floor a little bit more than most fives, where you can have one non-shooter and have Ben Gold be a okay shooter.
Yeah.
Ben Gold is going to have to defend the five, and that's going to be the biggest question mark on that, right?
Zach Fremantle versus Ben Gold one-on-one for the Big East tournament.
College basketball is dead.
Ben Gold at +1600. I'm close.
I think Gold is +1600.
I would not.
I don't think Fremantle can guard Ben Gold.
Yeah, if you give me what Ben Gold has,
Fremantle couldn't guard you.
Get out of here.
One out of 17 times.
Ben Gold is such an easy guard. It's unbelievable.
And that's why Zach Fremantle can't guard him.
Right.
Gold can put the ball on the floor more than Fremantle can.
True.
Gold just keeps getting better in defense of Gold. He really has shown a lot of improvement year over year. You know, even over the course of this season, he had a couple plays in the NCAA tournament. He put the ball on the floor, you know, a little pump fake, ball on the floor and drive.
Shall we move on to the national champions here?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Who won the national championship this year?
Seton Hall.
Oh, good for that.
Honestly. Who won the CBI?
I don't know. I'll look into that. You guys take it away with UConn.
Cassidy's is you.
I mean, I'll just be insufferable for a little bit more than normal. As always. We left a national championship parade yesterday, which we got to do last year as well. So that was pretty fun. I don't know. That might have been the most dominant basketball team I've seen play college basketball.
Seattle.
So I
knew it.
I mean, like Seattle that. I was like, did Seattle have a really good year that I don't know
about? Yeah, they won the CBI ever.
They won CBI. They
won the CBI. National champions, just like UConn. They're equals.
I think next year UConn obviously will have a lot of question marks, but at this point, if Dan Hurley is coaching, I'm going to believe in them. You know, if you start Hassan Diarra at the one. And Caravan comes back, and then some of these freshmen stay. I would say they can't be as good as they were last year, but I literally thought it was impossible to repeat in college basketball nowadays, and they did it. So by somehow being better, this is this is a wagon. Just keep them in the Big East as long as humanly possible. Ryan.
Yeah, Dan Hurley has that thing rolling at a level that we haven't seen in 10-plus years, 15-plus years. I have no idea what the roster looks like next year because he's going to lose four of his five starters. He lost three of his five starters last year, and he repeated. Now, that's a little bit – because Donovan Clingan was good enough to start last year by the end of – not – well, the time play call last year, I guess the season's over. But you know what I mean. He was good enough to start behind Adama Sanogo, and then he slots right in there. They don't have anybody at that level this year.
Slamson erasure?
Nah.
Some concerns there.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the most dominant college basketball teams I've ever seen. I feel like that goes without saying here.
Other than Seattle.
Well, I mean, Dude. Again, they're equals, both national champions.
Four teams won a game to end the season. Whoever won the CIT, Seattle, Seton Hall, and UConn. So put some respect
What's
on that
the name. CIT?
That's another tournament you have to pay to get in.
Is that below the CBI?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, look up who won that. While we do that, I'm going to take a look forward for UConn. Ahmad Noel is coming in. He's a Philly guy. I've seen him play a couple times. Well, he's from Tennessee, but he goes to high school in Philly. Really Norfolk interesting. What's up?
Norfolk State.
Really?
Shout out Rob Jones.
Good How coach. Do you know that?
Some of us know ball here, Tyler.
Some of us do know ball. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those people. But yeah, UConn moving forward. Somebody from the outside, Chris, looking at UConn. What are we thinking here?
Cam Spencer was the number one O-rating player on KenPom in the country, and Donovan Clingan was top 20. They lose both of those guys, as well as one of the best perimeter defenders for my money in Steph Castle in the country, as well as Tristan Newton, who was the second best player in the country on KenPom. They lose a metric ton of production. It's going to be hard to replace, guys. I know they're a wagon, and Hurley is a magic maker, and these last 2 years have been a wonderful ride. It's going to be really tough to be even close to the level that they were for the last 2 years. But you're UConn. You reload. You don't rebuild. They'll be just fine, right? But to have the expectation be win the Big East and be a top, you know, couple seed in the NCAA tournament seems maybe shooting a little too high from my perspective.
Yeah, they'll probably be better. You're right, Chris. They probably won't be worse.
I could see them being like a five
seed. It'll hard to be as good as the most dominant team we've ever seen.
Yeah,
it is. That's true.
That's true, Chris.
So after going through the most dominant tournament run, they just became the most dominant regular season team and then went on another dominant run. I know what you're saying, Chris, and unfortunately...
I would disagree with the fact that they're the most dominant regular season run. We've seen teams go undefeated in the regular season.
Yeah, and not real conferences.
Kentucky went undefeated in the SEC.
And what year?
Fake conference.
What? That was the year they lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin.
Fake conference.
SEC doesn't know ball.
Yeah, SEC.
I mean, look, that is very true.
So
the Big East is a known three-bid league. Okay, so let's...
Chris, no. It's in 115. We're not. They lost. They lost Adama Sanogo, Jordan Hawkins, and Andre Jackson, and we're just like, no, we're going to be better. I mean, Solo Ball is a top 50 recruit. We didn't really see him play this year. He's going to have to take a big leap next year. Jalen Stewart scored an electric 9 points in the Big East Tournament Championship. An electric, hit three threes in that game. I just think that Hurley has the right players in there, and if you bring back Caravan. You have the same heartbeat of a national champion there. So,
and
Ryan, what are you doing?
They've done. Yeah, Ryan, what are you doing? Actually,
my cat is attacking me.
A kitty cat. They've done really well in the portal too. Like of the guys they brought in from the portal, they got Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer.
Yeah. That's pretty
good. I mean, again, yeah, like we're talking about one of the best 2 year stretches in a program's history. So they haven't missed on much. And even the players they let go, I was really worried when a player like a Corey Floyd or Russell Diggins transferred out. And those ended up, I'm not going to sit here and shit on those kids, but like it ended up being that it looks like UConn made the right of talent evaluation decisions. Until I see otherwise, I'm just not sure why to think that this party ends. It will come crashing down because no one's ever three-peated since UCLA. So it will come crashing down, and you guys can lick my tears. But right now, double natties.
Right now, are they a top three preseason team in the Big East?
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be. If you just looked at the roster, though, I'm not sure if you take away any other outside bias. But, I mean, they got to be, right? I probably have them number one.
Yeah, I think you can blindly put them number one until at least we see, like, every team's roster. Like, if a Xavier adds two stars, I mean, they could be number one. But at the same time, if Xavier just kind of runs with this roster, it's like, okay, yeah. And if Claude stays or leaves. But I just think blindly, after the UConn's won back-to-back natties, I think you blindly have to put him at number one in the Big East.
And that Michigan kid, it looks like he's probably UConn bound.
Right. Good now. Big. Kind of slow, but does everything else pretty well. Pretty skilled.
Yeah. Who is this?
Terrence Reed.
Yeah.
Who? Did he play against St. John's early in the season? Did he play in that game?
I believe so. Let me double check probably. That. Yeah. The two guys on that Michigan team that I thought are really worrisome. He's one of them. It's him and then Doug McDaniel, who committed to, I believe, Kansas State.
Who shredded the St. John's pick and roll defense in that game.
Joel Soriano does not play pick and roll defense.
Joel Soriano is no longer in the conference. We can
talk about him whenever.
5 points, 11 boards in their 89-73 victory over the St. John's Red Storm.
That was the canary in the coal mine on that St. John's defense. Was that game? We said, it's just early. They'll figure it out.
Canary in the coal mine, Rye, on a Sunday evening
after a national championship.
Tyler, it's 1 p.m.
Yeah,
he's in his bag.
That's a little late for me.
You are old.
So. That is fucking true.
Yeah. All right, Mike, do what you do best. Let's wrap this baby up.
Yes, that is the stream. Thanks to all of our beautiful and talented guests and Tyler for being here. Yeah, you saw that one coming, dickhead. Sarah had to leave early. Thank you to her for coming. Chris, it's always a blessing talking to you, my friend. Ryan, it's always a blessing talking to you, my friend. Tyler, it's always a blessing talking to you, my friend. And Tommy. Who doesn't love Tommy Goat? If you don't love Tommy Goat, then you don't love life. That's it. I'm going to hit this end stream button, and then we're going to come crashing down. We're gone. We're gone. We're gone. Blah, 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 button. I hit the button. It's